But it was like, I would walk home after these shows and I'd just be like, I don't have anything like that. And what happened for me personally was like, no, I don't have those type of stories. But I have something. I have something to offer.
Welcome, listeners, to another episode of your favorite podcast, The Pursuit of Perfectness. I'm your co-host, Ellen Matthews, and
I'm your co-host, Dennis Pacheco.
I guess I'm not their co-host. I'm your co-host. I'm not like the listener's co-host.
Your co-host. Yeah. I was debating, should I say, well, and I'm your host?
What a power move. What a power move. Ellen's a co-host. Dennis is the host. Amazing. We got to tighten up this intro.
Wait, are we still in the intro part? Oh, my goodness. We talk to guests about perfectionism.
We talk to all sorts of people, creative types, therapists. We got some parents coming up. Just any kind of human that deals with perfectionism, with just all kinds of humans.
Yeah, we got all the humans.
All the humans.
And this episode, we had such a lovely conversation with one of the greatest people.
Yes, what a great person.
Yeah,
his name is Adam Wade. He is a storyteller. You may have heard of him on The Moth. We get into his bio in the episode, but fantastic storyteller, teacher at Magnet Theater, and just all around great guy. And had some really, really insightful mantras to live by. That he really practices what he preaches. So,
I feel like this was this. If you're coming here to get useful information, we try to limit that, but I think you're gonna get a lot of it. I think you're going to get
despite our best efforts, you're going to get a lot of good advice in this one.
Yeah.
Not from us.
Yeah, we try not clear. To. Right. No, never us.
Never us. But our guests, yeah, our guests are pretty great.
Yeah. So without further ado, here's our conversation with Adam Wade.
I love sitting down with people that I know for this because, Adam, I know you, but then we get to know you more deeply.
Yes.
You know?
That's what everybody wants, yeah.
That's what everybody wants. And so so you're originally from New Hampshire, just to give a little bit of background. When did you come to New York?
Came in 1998. I graduated from college at 22 and I moved here, yeah.
And did you always want to move to New York?
Yeah. I mean, I tell people the first book I ever read was Cricket in Times Square that I actually read. It's like a children's book about a cricket. It was Times Square. And I was always fascinated with it. And there was another big show. It was a news show, like either like 2020 or Primetime Live or Dateline. But I think it was – I don't think it was like Dateline. Or maybe even like 60 Minutes, but it was about Elaine's on the Upper East Side. There was like a literary hangout.
Yes.
And I remember seeing that when I was younger. And like Elaine, who very loud woman that owned the place. And, you know, there's a lot of celebrities like Sylvester Stallone was going in with like Brigitte Nielsen. And there was just like, you know, so it was just like kind of like a cool hangout, you know, and I was like, wow. It was almost like what would be my Studio 54. It was more of a nerd. I mean, with Sly Stallone, but
I know that's so funny that yeah, it's like a literary hangout. So of course you'd see Sylvester Stallone and Brigitte Nielsen. I don't know. That's very funny.
Yeah, for the he wanted like different type of street cred, Sly.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and okay. Yeah. And so to answer. So I'd always wanted to come, and we came on a. I went to Keene State College in Keene, New Hampshire, and I took an art class. It was like the history of art history. Yeah, And they had a day trip to New York City. And like the bus left New Hampshire like at 3 a.m. And then they went to like the Cloisters. They went to like the Met. And I remember going and none of my friends wanted to go. And I'm like, I'm going. And I remember distinctly this girl asked, I was like first on the bus because I wanted a window seat so I could, you know, I have that moment by myself when we're coming into New York. And there was like this really pretty girl and there was like two of them. And she's like, do you mind sitting over here so we can sit together? And I was like, and then I looked and I would have had an aisle seat. I'm like, no. And I'm like, no way. And they were pissed. They were very upset. And I don't care. I was like, I don't care. You won't go out. You know, I'm like, you're not going to go out with me anyway. So I don't care. I said it in my head, but it's like, you're not going to ruin this for me. They gave me a bad look. And then the highlight was we went to the Cloisters, which was really nice. And then I befriended a couple other girls. And when I say that, I was like a sophomore and I think they were freshmen. I just said, listen, I don't have any friends on this trip. Can I just be with you guys? I won't talk too much. And they're like, okay. And we went to, the Hard Rock Cafe on, I think it was on 59th Street or 57th Street. And that was great. So we took a cab, which was like exciting. And we went and they're like Elvis's jumpsuit was there and I had a cheeseburger and I'm like, I'm in New York and yeah. I have the photo, but I had them take a photo of me walking in front of the Met and I try to look like James Dean. Like I had my hands in my pocket. I was wearing my khaki pants and, I don't look like, but like, you know, and I always had that like in my dorm room, like that photo. Cause like I'm a New Yorker now. Like, yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
That's amazing. Yeah. So to continue to set the background for the listeners, since moving to New York, you're now a 20-time Moth Story Slam winner. And by the way, I heard you on the Moth randomly. I messaged you one day because I listened sometime and I'm like, it's Adam. I'm so excited. It was one of your great stories about your grandmother and your great aunt. That's a charming one. And you've also, you have an Audible original bestseller entitled You Oughta Know, Adam Wade. And it has over 10,000 reviews.
Yeah, it's still doing well. Still getting more and more reviews, which is after 2 years, which is really nice, like ego booster. Refresh, absolutely. More likes, more good reviews. It's good.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if I heard you on the Moth before I met you, and I think I did, because I was a big Moth listener back in the early 2000s and then into the,
And then in addition, Adam, you've also been a storyteller instructor at the Magnet Theater for the last 12 years. I've personally taken your storytelling class and can only say wonderful things about it. It was a really great experience and helped me to understand the art of storytelling.
You did a great job too, and through your story, I use Dr. Browner soap now. that sounds like a good soap. I've been using that soap.
That's since, right.
It's a good soap.
Yeah, I never used peppermint. I was more of a Dial guy, Dial or Dove. Now
I would love to hear from you, Adam, how we got from you moving from New Hampshire to New York to where you are now. Like it was a journey. How did you get into storytelling? How did that find you? Did it find you or did you find it?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. I moved here when I graduated. I found out I could get housing at NYU for 10 weeks. That was and I didn't know anybody when I moved here, but I had found online something that like there was some type of chat board or something where people were going to either Columbia or NYU and living there in the summer in the dorms.
And I did that.
Yeah. Oh, in the summer?
In the summertime. Yeah. I did it my junior year of college. It was great.
Wow. So did you take any classes or did you just?
I was doing an unpaid internship in New York City.
Okay. That's exactly what I did too. Yeah. I mean, it was an unpaid, but it got me here and I ate at the dorms and it was like, you're here. I mean, it was like an apartment, you know, in a lot of ways. Now, did you do a Columbia or NYU or?
No, I did NYU. Yeah. I was right outside of Washington Square Park. It was like an amazing.
Wow. Yeah. Me too. I mean, I was like, It was called Reuben Hall, and it was 10th Street and 5th Avenue. And I remember calling because, you know, my parents were just freaking out. They didn't really know New York, and they had been, like, maybe, like, in the late 80s, and they just said, like, so right. I called, and I just said, I go, is this a safe area? You know, I mean, I just don't know my way around. They're like, the guy at NYU is like, you're living on 5th Avenue and 10th Street. You're going to be all right, kid. So, and it was just great. And you had the internship. And my goal was to, if I was going to make it here, I had 10 weeks. And my parents were like, you know, get it out of your system. And I was like, it's not really something about getting it out of my system. Mm. Like, I want to, you know, so I knew for me to survive, I didn't have, you know, money past those 10 weeks. So I got a job at Virgil's Barbecue. Now, and I still say, and I, you know, Ellen, I say in the class, it's like the biggest break I got because I immediately had money coming in, not a lot, but some. And it was like a community of people. They kind of took care of me. So I had that right away and they helped me find. It was just huge. And, you know, I remember trying to look for apartments in New York and you needed a thing called a guarantor. And I was like, I don't have a guarantor. What? And, so they helped me find an apartment in Fairview, New Jersey. And it was, right by the George Washington Bridge. And it was on like a bus, right on the bus line to the city. So there's like three or four buses. It was the 128, the 120, the 155, 165, 166, and 168. So there's like four buses that would go through the locals, but you were right there and it would take you right into Port Authority. And then they had like these other buses that like would compete with New Jersey Transit that weren't so safe. But I mean, you get on those if you needed to. So there's plenty of transportation getting in and out of New York. And, yeah, and it was great. It was just, you know, a basement apartment at the bottom of the hill next to a cemetery. And, you know, but you were there. I mean, you know, I mean, you could be in New York in 45 minutes. And it was funny because I'd befriend people around in like, in the town, and they'd be like, "Yeah, we never go into the city." I go, I go in every day, so I felt like a big deal. From that job, you know, I tried to get into the NBC Page program to try to break into entertainment, and then I was just doing open mics at night, and I played the guitar. So I was it was guitar musical comedy. I did like musical comedy, and that helped, and it was a nice shield for me. I had something in front of me to hold. And, and with the storytelling, Ellen, it would just be like telling little stories and then playing a song about those stories, telling a little story. Okay. And, it was good. The good thing for me is like a lot of comedy shows at that time, if they had a bunch of standups, they wanted, again, a musical act was great.
Yeah.
And I didn't think about that. I thought it was just because I was really talented.
I'm sure that's part of
it. But it divided that up. And then after a while, it was like I kind of hit a wall. Like there was nothing else I could do really creative with that. And at the time, I'd become an NBC page, which was great. And because you meet, it was like another community. I had the Virgil's community, then I had that community. But it's
also not easy to get into the page.
No. I tell people, I mean, the way I did it was I dropped off resumes every other week for 2 years.
And then when
I finally got in, it was that the persistence helped paid off.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Being in TV was great, Dennis, and meeting people. So that helped me get a lot of the TV jobs. But most of them at that time were like driving vans, getting coffee for people. And, you know, the years were going by and I was getting older and I was still kind of doing that. But I didn't really mind. I mean, waiting tables, what's the difference? You're closer to the inside. And Colin Quinn, one day, Seinfeld had come to our office and Seinfeld came. And he took photos with everybody. It was Colin Quinn's show, The Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn on Comedy Central. And it was the greatest day, like, because Seinfeld was there. Everybody got photos of him. And the next day, Colin is a really good guy. He was asking the whole staff, like, what's your Seinfeld story? And they're like, oh, yeah, we yada, yada, yada. And this, and everybody, black and white cookie. And then, and he's like, Wade, what's your sign? I go, I missed him. I was driving the van. I was picking up your underwear. And he's like, what? I go, I was picking up your underwear. Did you get your underwear? He's like, yeah. I go, yeah. I'm the one that got your underwear. So, like, he felt bad. He felt, like, visibly his face, you know. And he came up to me later, and he's like, I'm mad at you. I go, Colin, I'm kind of mad at you, too. And your boss, I was talking to your boss about you, and she said that you do stand-up. And he's like, I want to see a video. Can you bring in a video? We'll watch it together. And I was like, holy shit. Like, wow. So we watched a video, and it wasn't like 5-10 minutes. He took a long time. I mean, we watched it for like, it was a long video, and he watched the whole thing. And then he's like, can I be honest with you? And I'm like, sure. And he's like, stop playing the guitar and stop singing. And he's like, you're not. And I knew, I mean, I really wasn't good at it. And he's like, but you, what you should do is, focus on the little stories in between. Like and then he just said, he's like, you know, you're still kind of like a character on stage. Why, just be you. Like you have so much to offer. And I kind of passed that on in my classes. I mean, as individuals. So, so I started doing that. That's how I found the moth. You know, I mean, and the TV stuff, I started working for ESPN. I've had other jobs, but it was more focused now on storytelling. And, you know, I was still doing comedy shows, but I was just doing my stories. The sad thing is, without the guitar, a lot of those shows didn't want to book me anymore because it was so that was like a struggle too. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you'd show up without my guitar, and they'd be like, wait, where's the guitar? I go, no, I'm going to tell a story. And they're like, okay.
And like open mics aren't really storytelling crowds. They're like tell me jokes crowds, right?
Yep. So it was a huge struggle at that time. I have a friend Flanders in New Hampshire. He's like one of my roommates in college, and I remember like calling him after some of those open mics, and I'm just like, this is like tough. Like this is like this is I mean. I'm working and then doing these open mics and it's not going well, but I got to find something. I got to find like a fit. And it was like a puzzle, you know, like I got to find, and then I found the moth and like everything changed like in my life. You know, I give them all the credit because there was finally a venue where you could just go up and, you know, if you try to be funny, the audience didn't like it. But if you were just kind of like yourself and you put yourself in those moments that you were talking about before, Dennis, like they really, you could really connect to them. And it was great. And it just, it pushed me to get better and also, listen to other storytellers, listen to what what you were talking about with my, like that, that's a good ear. What you were talking about. Like people that use moments, people trying to just be authentic. You just got a lot better. You know.
It's my impression that the storytelling scene probably was pretty small and it's grown since then. Is that accurate?
No, yeah, it's a lot bigger now. I mean, at the time, the moth had probably maybe one or two slams a month, usually like one, and then it just kind of expanded. I mean, this was like 19 years ago, 20 years ago, and but the people that were there like wanted to be there. I mean, you had like the new Eureka Cafe would sell out Poetry Cafe. And I mean, people were there for stories. So they had an audience, but it just continued to grow and grow and grow. You know?
Yeah.
I have a question about the moth. And it's not a criticism. It's an observation. And I would love to hear your thoughts on it, Adam. Which is that I haven't heard all of your stories, but the ones that I've heard are, I think why I connect them to them so much is that they're very, they're like slices of life, right? And it's nothing, it's not some big, loud, crazy event that happened. It's just like you make like ordinary life really intriguing. And I think that's like very powerful. And I like stories like that. I listen to The Moth from time to time, and I've noticed lately that a lot of the stories I hear are like very sensational, like something crazy has happened. Like it is so crazy that you can't even believe it's true. And I was just like, oh, is it turning more to like, you know, you have to have a story where something, you know, like crazy happens. You got fired from a job in the most insane way and a tornado came through, yeah, yeah. You know, and it's all these things. And I wonder, I don't know, have you noticed that as well? Or is that maybe I just caught a certain episode?
Yeah,
that
I mean, maybe. Yeah. I mean, their programming, I'm not sure, you know, it must be on their end, not to like overly defend them, but like, they've been working so much. They have so many stories now, and they want to have different type of stories too.
Yeah.
You know, they have such a large audience, you know, so, but for me, so I'm not sure how to answer.
Yeah.
But, for me, when I first started, I know Ellen, even at that time, there were a lot of those stories, you know, I remember there was I believe it was like a gentleman that jumped out of an airplane without a parachute. And that was a story. And I mean, and I'm going to be telling a story about, you know, getting a sandwich. You know, I'm like, how am I going to do this? And like a lot of times I would get intimidated. You know, there was a gentleman that like climbed every mountain in the world. And like every story, every time he got up, it was like a different mountain. And they were captivating. I was jealous. I mean, I'm not saying it as a, but it was like I would walk home after these shows and I'd just be like, I don't have anything like that. And what happened for me personally was like, no, I don't have those type of stories. But I have something. I have something to offer, you know, mm-hmm. just me, you know. So mm-hmm. so I think that it was a test for me. And it was like, no, like I don't have to try. I remember there was like I was telling this whole situation on a date, and I was like telling this girl, I was like, she's like, you know, I listen to The Moth and I jump out of plane, you know, I love the action stories. I'm like, yeah, nah, you probably haven't heard my story. The ones on the podcast is about getting a sandwich and then one going out to eat with my grandmother, so I don't, and my aunt. So and then she said something like, well, I know what we're doing on our next date. And I'm like, excuse me? And so I was just excited. So we got date number two. She's like, yeah, we're going to jump out of an airplane together. I'm like,
oh my God. That's a great date.
Yeah, it's a great date for certain people, not for Adam Wade. So I was just like, you know me for an hour now. Do I look like the type of guy that's going to go on a second date and get crazy and jump out of an airplane? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, no. I'm like, no.
I love the idea that now she's just going to organize like the most extreme activities in the hopes that she'll get in that story.
Maybe that's the angle.
I love that. But Adam, what I loved about your class specifically was I personally felt, and I think some of the other students in class felt like, I don't know, I don't think like enough interesting things have happened to me. What am I doing in a storytelling class? And you did an exercise where you said, oh, just take an object from your childhood and we'll start brainstorming about it. And mm-hmm. then sure enough, we had these great stories from our childhood, and it just started from a very simple place.
I think in a class, yeah. it's the best way to go, Ellen. You know, I keep it simple, especially when you start. You know, I mean,
yeah.
And sometimes the good thing, what I try to do in my class is really try to keep it simple. So when you do have that crazy, crazy story, mm-hmm. you have the building blocks to be able to put it together. You know what I mean? So it's right. almost like the class. And also like in just the regular class that, just the Adam Wade storytelling at the Mag, it's like learn how to tell a story, you know? So then when you take these bigger ones, then it's like, okay, now I've heard these. I've talked to Adam. I've talked to my classmates. Now I even when I'm working on it, I can send them to them. And But like, wait for those. But learn the basics.
Yes.
And what I really love about the class, we just had a class show. It's like, I'm really pushing you just to be yourself and show what you have to offer in those stories. Everybody connected to the audience. So we could talk about great beginnings and great endings. I think that comes once you kind of start getting comfortable talking on stage.
Right.
You know, what type of ending do I like? And do I want to put, as opposed to Ellen, this is the way you do it. You do it this way. And it's like, no, maybe that's not how. So it's giving people, I don't want to suffocate anybody. I want them. I do think it's a very creative class because you're thinking about how you want to do it and maybe trying something and it just doesn't work. And then you're like, okay, now I'll try this. So the last thing I want to do with these classes, I mean, that's why I've done it for 12 years, that it's not like a Chips Ahoy Cookie Factory where every story just sounds exactly the same. Mm. Like I think I would be bored. I wouldn't be doing it still. I think by doing it the way, like, we're just trying to give you some prompts, working on things, thinking about these, trying things out, getting to know each other as you go along. So once we get feedback, it becomes like a tight-knit family, and it just helps. And the positive atmosphere, comfortable talking to each other, laughing, and, you know, but there's a lot of that. And I think that gives people in these classes the want to grow. And, you know, taking Rick Andrews in improv class, knowing everybody else at the Magnet, going to a lot of improv shows, that's why I feel like I'm such a good fit with the Magnet, too. You know, and that's one of the reasons why I've stayed. I wanted to stay. You know?
Yeah.
Can I ask a question about the class?
Sure. You take it.
Well, I'd love to. Yeah, here's my question. It's a thinly veiled question that's self-interested, but does everybody who takes the class want to perform on stage, or do some people just want to be able to tell a story to like at a party?
Yeah. It's funny because that's happening a lot more, especially post-COVID. So the first question I ask when people come in is like, what brought you here? And a lot of times it's that, like, I want to get up on stage and perform, and I want to be, you know, a lot of stand-ups are taking the class to incorporate storytelling into their stand-up. And then, there's people for work doing interviews, stuff like that. And then like, you know, there was a gentleman that took the class and he's like, I'm constantly learning as an instructor, so please know that. And there was a gentleman that he's says, like, people, I tell stories at parties and I can tell they're just way too long because people, I can see by their eyes that they're getting bored. Oh, no. And like, I know the feeling in a lot of ways. Like, if I'm at a bar with a friend and, you know, and they're trying to introduce me to other, you know, I remember there was friend of mine and his girlfriend, they were introducing me to another girl, and they're like, Adam, he's a comedian, he does storytelling. And she's like, tell me a story. And she did not want to hear a story. But she did not want to hear a story. She did not want to hear a story. And they say that, but they don't, I mean, in a crowded bar and the TV's on, they don't like, so it's like, this is not going to go well. And I know because this has happened a million times. I try to put myself in that situation tell them a minute story. And if they look like they're done, stop. Like, you know, there might be tons more of the story to go, Dennis, stop. And then if they look at you and they say, well, Dennis, then what happened? Then you can keep going. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then you stop again. And then so it gives you an out as opposed to going on and on. And okay, I've totally, and it happens. Not in my classes, fortunately, but it happens at shows, storytelling shows. You've lost the whole audience, but they're going to go 5 or 10 more minutes and they just keep going and going. They don't know what to get off the stage. So it's doing that sometimes. Do I have I found a connection in a minute or 2 minutes? Stop. Okay. Yeah. Hey, you know, what's going? And I think that helped him just gain confidence where he's like, yeah, I'll just do that now. And if it starts getting boring, figure out why it's getting boring. What part was it boring? Or, you know, you feel like that you lost them in their eyes, you know, if their eyes are just kind of glazed. Sometimes people don't tell you why they're taking the class. You'll ask them that question. And there was a gentleman recently, this is one of my happiest things. And he said he was just doing it for social, just to get better. You know, if he's going on a date and just like around friends, he could tell stories. Mm-hmm. And this was in the Magna Training Center. So it was before COVID. And I'm like, the online classes are great. But doing that, being in person sometimes during break, you could just walk over to someone and say, hey.
Right.
So I just said, you know, what? Like it was week three. And I'm like, all right. And he was a really nice, he was quiet. And I kind of, I'm an introvert. So when I see other introverts, I want to know, you know, so I'm like, why are you really taking this class? And he's like, I went to like, and I don't know, I can't remember the exact schools, but I believe it was, he went to Princeton and then he went to Harvard and he has his MBA. He's brilliant. And he's like, I'm 32 years old, Adam, and I can't get a job. I'm going for all these big finance jobs. And, I mean, I know my stuff, but once I get in there and I start talking, I can't connect. The story he was working on in the class was how his great grandfather was from China. He came over to America on a boat as a stowaway in San Francisco, opened up a business, and over the years brought each and every one of his family members over into the States. And now this gentleman that was taking my class was the first to graduate high school and then college. And he's like a genius. And I said, you know, like nothing for nothing. Do you tell, you know, the story you're working on in the class, do you ever talk about that? Like at interviews? He's like, oh, no. Like, I don't know what to say. And I go, yeah, but do they ever ask you, like, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself? He's like, yeah, they all do. Yeah. I'm like, well, break that down into like 2 or 3 minutes and tell them. And like the way the conversation was like, you're interviewing for them, but they're interviewing for you too. So it's like you're figuring out, I go, if they ask that, like tell them that story. And if they cut you off or they don't want to hear it, you don't want to be there. You don't, that's not a place of work you want to be. And I go, but have that attitude. Like it's not just, it's back and forth. So, that kind of get, and I'm not a human resource guy, please. I mean, please know our Pursuit of Perfectionist listeners. I am not a human resource. I have no idea. I just know people. And, right. I kept in touch with them after the classes. And he said, like, I had an interview. They asked me, I started getting into that story. They looked bored out of their mind. I stopped. And he's like, and I walked out of there. He's like, I don't want to be there. He's like, I don't want that job. And it was at a big place. And then, like, you know, but it kept going, and like 3 months later, he got a big job because of that. They loved him for that, and he appreciated that. So it's like, finding those things out. I mean, that's life. And as opposed to taking a job at a place that they don't care about you. And he got offers. He got two offers at places, and he said, I didn't like the way during the interview process, they asked me to tell them a little bit about themselves. The guy went on his phone. I'm in the middle of the story. There's two guys there. One of the guys went on his phone. He's like, I don't want to be there. So it's just, so those types of things, I just find it, you know, it's profound. You know, it really is.
That's fantastic advice.
Yeah. That is great advice.
Yeah.
That reminds me, I was on a job interview once and I was talking to the interviewer, and a guy like was walking past the office. I guess he was a buddy that worked there too. And he like waved at him and they kind of acknowledged each other. I was in mid sentence. And I just felt so like, this guy's not listening to me.
Yeah.
And I probably should have gotten up and walked out.
Yeah. Well, you don't know. We talk about vulnerability. I mean, you're in a very vulnerable situation at that time. You know, you really are. You want to get a job. You want to get insurance. You want to get this and that.
Yeah.
But you can't forget, you know, if that's the beginning, it's not going to get much better than that. It's not going to get much better than that, you know?
And it's so true what you said about connecting. Like when you are sharing that personal side of you, you know, they leave, the person interviewing you is leaving thinking, I know a little bit about that person. I connected with that person. I'm going to remember that person, as opposed to just your resume and all these data points that are not going to connect on the human level.
Yeah, man, at the end of the day, you know, I look at my job history, and you know, when I got out of the PAGE program, I was interviewing to be an assistant for a lot of jobs, and I didn't get that, and probably rightly so. I mean, I wasn't assistant material. But then I found out, again, through the pages, becoming a page, it was just like a spider web. Every job I got after that was connected. And there was a girl, Mary Therese, that helped me get this interview. And she's like, come by the, VH1. And, I was going to be digitizing videotapes, you know, and I'll take it, you know. And I told her, I'm like, I don't have a tie. I mean, I'm wearing a T-shirt. I got jeans on. And she's like, just come in. And there was a woman, I don't know, she was one of the executive producers of, I don't know, I'm not sure. I think it was Wyatt Cynic's show. It was something. But she, Diane Fitzgerald, I went in there and I just talked to her. And I was in such a rush, I had no time to think. All nervous energy. And this was like 2001, but I remember that I just clicked with her, and she's like, don't worry. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm not dressed up. She's like, come on, sit down. And the way she talked, it was just like, wow. And then I felt so comfortable. It was probably the best interview I ever had for a job, you know, and I go, so when do you think, she's like, when do you think you can start? You know, it's just like, wow.
It's the best.
And again, digitizing tapes. It wasn't like, but it was just like, okay, that's a human. And the way she treated me at that point, I would have taken a bullet for her. I needed the work, you know? So it's amazing that they just talk to you like a human, you know?
Yeah.
Well, why don't we take a quick break? And then we'll come back for our second half of the interview.
All right, great.
It sounds good.
Wonderful. We'll be right back. I say as if we're on a radio show.
And we're back. Adam, I just wanted to kind of bookend that question I started earlier. This is totally self-interested. A lot of times we'll use our guests as therapists because we're doing this show primarily to become perfect people, right? No, never mind. Sorry.
That's correct.
That's what the show used to be, but it's not that anymore.
Either to become perfect or just, to be more gentle with ourselves and be cool with not being perfect. One of those two extremes.
One of those two. So when I asked about why people take the class, because I have no problem getting up on stage and pretending to be other people and saying whatever, ridiculous things. But if I'm in a group of people, let's say mixed company, where I know some people really well, some people I don't know very well, but maybe I think they're all cool. I want them to think I'm cool. Sometimes I'll like start, like I'm very like in some ways an introvert where I like kind of fade back at parties and my voice doesn't carry that much, but sometimes I'll start to tell a story and then I'll see like five sets of eyes on me and immediately my face will get hot. I'll immediately become self-conscious of like, oh, this better be good. Cause they all tell stories and all their stories are really good and they're funny. And I get really self-conscious and I just peter out and then everybody's attention just kind of fades away. And I'm just like, why can't I do this? And it's just like, I don't know, people have moments at parties where you're like, oh, now it's my turn to tell a story and I have the floor and you tell your story and everybody's like, we are satisfied with that, you know? But I don't know, it's tough for me. So I guess what's your advice?
I mean, the best advice is I'm constantly in the same predicament, and I constantly have the same feelings. When you say it's easy to get up on stage and perform when it's not your words. I recently had an opera singer that performs for 100,000, you know, one show was in Italy or what, it was like 100,000 people, and she said I get a little bit nervous like a normal person would, but nothing like walking into this class. And I was just like, why? And she's like, because like I'm not singing an opera. I'm being myself and I have to talk as myself.
Yeah.
And I just think it's a process. You got to see it as a process. And know that it's not even going back, but like, I mean, if I'm in a park, I remember the, you know, sometimes it's like the Magnet Theater would have holiday parties or, you know, and, you know, I knew Megan was there. Megan was at the door. And then, you know, there's former students that I'm friends with. There's other people at the theater that I'm friends with. But it's like sometimes it was just kind of nice. And maybe this is like a different mind frame than I had like in college or, you know, I'd like to say high school, but I didn't get to go to parties in high school. Where you just kind of just sit there. I think being comfortable with yourself and just like, okay, yeah, maybe this is the time in the party that I'm going to be a wallflower. And then if, you know, then you bump into someone that, you know, like, you know, I bump into Jamie Rivera and all of a sudden we just start talking. Then all of a sudden I'm getting like a little bit more comfortable and those other thoughts are just kind of like going away. And then all of a sudden I turn around and there's Armando. And then there's like a 2 minute conversation. And then another person comes over and Dennis. So we're talking to, so like, I think it, for me, I just try not to think about it so much. Try to, and especially in a party situation where it's like, you might go 10 minutes without talking. And then someone's like, why aren't you talking to anybody? I don't know. I'm just here. Just kind of just enjoying the moment, just living in the moment, just talk, you know, not talking, you know, right now, just kind of observing. And then all of a sudden, then 5 minutes later, you're surrounded by a group. And as far as like telling the stories then and stuff, there's part of us that maybe it is as performers, Dennis, in general, where we hope everybody in the audience is having a good time. Everybody's laughing. Everybody's enjoying us. But we also need to understand the audience, not everybody's going to like us. Not everybody's going to like our story, never, or your performance, or someone's going to be out there that's going to want to just kind of knock you down a peg after one of your best shows and say something. So I think if anything, it's to be protective, especially if you're, you know, maybe you have your story at that you always use at parties and go with what works when you're in that vulnerable situation. If you know it works, stick with that. Don't try something new where it might get in your head. You know, there was a comedian I listened to on CD and it was like his philosophy of this type of thing. And it's just like, yeah, you're not gonna please everybody. You're like, don't. So just, but at the end of the day, just be you. Like, and also appreciate the one per, if there's 10 people surrounded you, and by the time you finish the story, there's still one person. And even if maybe they didn't love your story, but they just like you, Dennis, appreciate that. Try to appreciate those smaller moments. Cause those are your fans. Those, and when I say they're your friends, they're your fans. Or they say, Dennis, hey, Dennis, great story, but you should have stopped about 5 minutes ago. And then you laugh, but it goes back to that connection. You know, it's that connection. Yeah. And you know, we say it at the Magnet Theater, I got your back. They have your back. Like, you know, and those small moments, them just doing that, that's going to live with you. You know, when you talk about memory, that's what's, and that helps, you know, and if you keep working on it, like anything, like improv, like storytelling, like sketch, magnettheater.com, that's a plug. You're going to get better. But I think a lot of times it's like, you know what? I'm not going to tell this story unless so-and-so's here. You come over here or you introduce me and I'll tell this story. So you have that. When I worked at the UN, for UNICEF and I would have to do presentations, I'd always make sure there was two people that liked my stories, like me, were right there. And that always made me, you know, cause people might be looking at the phones and that would kill me, you know, like anybody, like, you know, you watch it. Yeah. Then I'd look at them too and they'd be smiling at me, looking at me. And I was like, all right, I got my anchors. Who cares? You know, I got them. I don't give a crap, you know? So it's having that balance, but also, knowing, like, again, constantly trying to reinforce that to my students and myself, like, not everybody's going to like your story. It's okay. It's okay. Not every, for some reason, you know, going into commercial auditions for the people that are, you know, sometimes, like, it's not you. It's like you look like their ex-boyfriend, or you look like yeah. the brother that they used to beat him up, you know, bully him. So it's like you can't – there's so many things that are out of your control. So just try to focus on what's in your control. Yeah. And if you do awful at the party, the next day, I tried. I'm going to do something nice for myself. You know, I'm going to do something. I'll go get a cookie, or I'll go get a milkshake. I it's all about food, but I mean it. That's what I do. Like, you know, come on, Wade, come to this party. I'm good. No, come to the party. Oh, I'll go. And then if I do that, I'm going to do something nice for myself. You know, if I'm going to put myself in a situation I'm not usually in.
Yeah. Being kind and being soft. What is it? Being soft and kind to yourself?
Yeah.
But it goes a long way. And that's not self-help mumbo-jumbo or whatever. I mean it. Like, it's just like, why? Like, no. Like, yeah.
But yeah, we're not like, about self-help here.
The one thing that I always connect to over the years is, like, especially in, like, social situations where there's a lot of people, like you said, there's the cool people, this and that. It's great when there's, like, one or two people in the room as well that think a lot of you. And when I say that, they're your friends, they're your supporters. There's love. And it's not they're in love with you, or they might be, but they appreciate you for you, and they see you that way. They see you how you want to be seen, and you feel, and there's like a moment as you're talking to them at that party. There's many other people there, but you're like, I'm my best self right now. And just hold that when you have them there. Other people come by, they could care less. Or you wave to someone at the bar, they don't wave back. You have your group. Appreciate that and stay with that moment, because there's going to be thoughts, oh, why am I here? Who am I with? I'm here, and there are people that appreciate me. You know, maybe I'll mingle around, but this is my home base for the rest of the night. You know,
I'm gonna keep that in my chest pocket.
Yeah, absolutely.
Best pocket. That's great advice.
Absolutely. Yeah. You owe it to yourself. You know, and I'm saying that as a friend of yours too, Dennis. You know, you owe it to yourself. The other great thing is you go to some of these social, you don't know what everybody else is thinking too. You know what I mean? And nobody's so thinking about you. You know, no, like what's in your mind. They don't, you know, and it's something I need to, you know, practice what you, like, you don't know what crap other people are going through at that time. You know, you want to take everything so personally, you know, but you can't,
Yeah. That just telling yourself, like, well, you know what? I don't know what that person was thinking.
Yeah.
I can't know what that person was thinking is a liberating thought I've found lately.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got, as promised, I got one other question.
Sure.
Do you consider yourself a perfectionist?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, yes. I always say it's like OCD in a lot of ways. I try to pull back. With the stories, you know, I've been working on some side projects. You want it to come out perfect. And then what I've learned with storytelling is, like, each time for me, I approach a story and I tell a story, it's going to come out a little bit different. So as far as the perfection in that, in my art, knowing that there's something each time you do it, it's going to come out a different way, and it's a special way. You might forget a part of a story. You might remember a different part of a story. So just go with it, and you got to let go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in writing screenplays and pilot scripts, like, you know, showing it to people, getting feedback, it's important. But at the end of the day, you kind of got to let it go and think about it, refine it a little, and then push it off, you know. So it's a battle. It's a battle.
Yeah, that's something a lot of the folks that we talk to, we talk to a lot of creative folks, it's basically like, at a certain point, you just have to let it go. You're not finished with it. It's just, it's time to let it go.
Yeah.
It also, when we talk a lot about perfectionism being like, can it be a good thing and can it be a bad thing? And like in storytelling, the way I'm visualizing it, it's like the perfectionism comes with like prepare. Like you want to be prepared, right, for your story. You want to give it respect and you don't want to just go up there and wing it. You want to make sure that you've really prepared as much as possible. So that's kind of like the good part of perfectionism. But then once you're on stage, you got to let go of that. And if something happens that you didn't expect, you know, embrace that. And like, now we're done with the preparing part and we're going to embrace whatever comes and we're going to turn that into something good. So that's kind of how I'm compartmentalizing. Like it's good up to a point and then you let it go. It depends on what context we're in. Do you resonate with that?
100%. And it becomes like it might not be fully balanced, but it is a balance of those where the two great examples I have was there was a Moth Grand Slam. So there's a lot on the line, just, you know, street cred with the storytelling nerds or whatever. And I had a story and, you know, it came to a point where I was looking to perfect, you know, this was probably about 10 years ago. This story, I'm going to get it perfect. When I work on stories and in my teaching, it's more of a bullet point, less of memorization. And this is the reason why was I was doing the bullet points. And then it was like, I memorized each individual bullet point. And then it became, I memorized the whole thing because I didn't want to leave anything out. I didn't want to miss a beat. And I way, way over prepared. But when I got up on stage, I went up there and I hit every note, Dennis. I hit every note right to a T of the story, of the content. I'm not at the performance, but the content. I hit it everything I needed. And then when the story was over, I stopped and I looked at the audience and there was no connection throughout the whole story. And it was odd. You know, it was at the Highline Ballroom and it was like, you know, 400 people there. It didn't resonate. And it was a great, you know, for me in my mind, it was like, this was like one of my best stories. Like what happened here? And I couldn't figure it out. The girl that was working like the merchandise booth was a friend of mine. And after I go, and I was like on the verge of tears, Dennis. And I'm like, what did I do? I prepared, like I was working on this for like 6 hours a day. And she's like, Adam, it was like an out of body experience. It was like, you were telling the story, but you weren't there. You weren't there. Usually, you know, you're this personality, like when you're up there and talking, we're hanging on every word. It was like you were like a robot. And I went home and I was just like, you know, like, yeah, like I prepared it totally different. And everything you just said, Ellen, it was like, I didn't, where was Adam? So after that, it was like, no, like, it doesn't matter. Like the story is your story. It's going to come out and it's going to, but you have to be there. And Dennis, that's why it was such a huge compliment. You said, I listened to your stuff. It's like, you're there. You have to be there. You have to be there when you're telling the story because then if you're in it, you know, cause you're looking to connect. You're looking in writing. Yes, I agree. It's got to be perfect or, but like in storytelling, like you got to be there and you got to be able to connect to that audience. And like, that's the important part. The story, sometimes the stories of mine are like so, but it's the connection to the audience that really, you know, and it's personality or whatever, but it's like the people that are paying to go see you, they want intimate contact with a human. And if it's a storytelling, first person narrative, they want to be able to connect with that. And so, I mean, it was a huge lesson for me. And after that, it was like, I'm never going back to memorizing. If I forget something, who cares? And you know, you'd have like the nerds, the storytelling nerds come, there'd be one guy every time after show, you forgot this line. I've heard you tell that story before. Like, hey, you know, and I'd be like, next time, I'll get it next time. You know, I liked it better when you talked about, oh, well, thank you. I appreciate you trying to ruin my night. I appreciate it. The other thing is, this was probably 4 or 5 years ago. There was a show in Hoboken at the Miles Square Theater and I went up, the microphone wasn't working, the sound wasn't working.
Oh, no.
So, you know, we talk about perfection And but it was a good night for me. This was one of my best performances because I handled it. And maybe it was because of improv classes and everything else. But I was like, you know what? Like, wait a minute. Like, as you walked to the theater, you saw how you thought it was going to go.
Yes.
The story hasn't even started yet, and it's not going that way. So how are you going to react to that? And I was just like, you know what? I breathe. And I was just like, just go with it. Just go. You know what? I was playing with the microphone and am I going to get upset at the guy, the tech? No. Like, why? Like, why? Like, how is that going to help me with the audience?
Right.
So I was just like, all right, no, let's try to fix it. And they were laughing. You know, they're there to see a show. They want to like this person that's on stage. And it was like all of a sudden it became about that. Once we got the mic going, then I had a nice relationship with the audience. I like talking about you at the party. I had about 150 people now on my side looking at me the way I wanted to be seen, and then talking to them and telling them the story. It worked, but it wasn't the way. So I'm always telling my students, I was like, the way you think it's going to come out, it's not going to come out that way. And it's okay. Right. It's okay. Take comfort in that. But on the other hand, what do you have in your control? Whether the lights, what do you have in your control? Okay. Well, I got the story down. I know where this, you know, it's my story. I've been working on it. I put in the time. I've gotten the reps. I've said it out loud a couple of times. I've written it down a couple of times. So just go with it. Just go with it.
Yeah. You know?
It's that lack. And then it like that was story wise or, you know, who cares? At the end of the day, it's a live show. It's a live show. And it was just such a fun, it ended up being a fun thing, but I went into it that way. If I had gone into it, you know, it depends on the day you're having, right? If I had been like, oh, this has got to go really, you know, this has got to be perfect. You know, all of a sudden you yell at the tech, like, what the hell is going on? Then it changes. Then the audience is like, who's this guy? He's yelling at the tech guy. Absolutely. We don't like him. We don't like him. You know, and then it's like, okay, now I got to tell a story about being Adam Wade. I mean, it's not going to work. He's not warm and fuzzy. He's kind of a dick. Right. He's kind of a dick.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So those are two big ones for me, you know, as far as examples.
And, you know, when I think back to stories, obviously I can recall the details, but the first thing I think of is like the feeling I had, right? Like the first is just like the physical feeling of remembering like that connection with the person telling the story. And then the details come. Yeah. And I think that's just to your point of connection first, details second. Yeah.
And Ellen, it goes such a long way. And I think I've told you this, Ellen, but, you know, the greatest thing to ever happen to me in my storytelling year, you know, doing this, you know, I've been on stages in New York for over, almost 24 years now. I was on the subway going to Brooklyn, and it was a packed subway, and there was this girl, you know, woman like staring at me. And I was like, oh, okay. I looked back up and then she was coming towards me. I'm like, what's happening here? And she's like, listen, I got to tell you something. I go, okay. She's like, I don't know your name, but I know you told the story 6 or 7 years ago at Union Hall in the basement. And you told the story about your cat Peaches.
Oh,
and I was like, she recited and she said, she's like, you know, this girl and the kiss and it can't do that. She was like telling me the story. And I was just like, and then it's like, next stop, you know, she's like, well, this is my stop. It was so nice to see you. She got off. It was like, my head was spinning.
Yeah.
And out of all my years of performing, like, that's my gold. That's my Netflix special. You know, she had given me like a bar, like out of, you know, this is a New Yorker, lives in Brooklyn, goes to Union Hall. So she's seeing good shows. You know what I mean? And all the entertainment stimuli that she's had in the past 7 years, 6 to 7 years, she was able to remember it. She didn't remember my name, which is fine. Adam Wade, adamwade.com. but she remembered like the whole story, like that, like how, like what's better than that? Like, and again, people could say, well, what if you won a million, whatever. For me, what's better than that? Nothing. What's better than nothing?
Yeah.
Like nothing. That's why I do it. That's why I do it.
Yeah. And that story, Peach, is fresh in my mind. I just listened to it. I have two cats.
Yeah, Peach is great. See, on Zoom, what I do is...
Oh, we can see the cat.
When you can't see the faces on the Zoom shows, I tape her up on my computer, like by the camera. So I tell the story to Peaches.
That's Peaches. Peaches, yeah. Yeah, if Marilyn Monroe was a cat.
And look, little white paws.
Little gloves.
Amazing. I love that. Adam, just to round out our discussion, you had mentioned that you're a perfectionist in some ways, and we asked you before the interview, do you read anything to deal with perfectionism? And you listed two books that sound amazing. The first is called The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz and Strength and Stillness by Bob Roth. Could you talk a little bit about how you stumbled upon those and how you work them into your life and to help you when you feel that perfectionism coming on?
Yeah, you know, a student of mine highly recommended, the Four Agreements, and it took me about probably 3 years to get it. And I finally, and I might have read it in an article after, but, you know, the Four Agreements, it's the first one is your word is impeccable, I believe. Yes. And then the second one is don't take things too personally. Yep. The third one is don't make assumptions or try. And I think these are try not to. I mean, it might be don't. Yeah. But for me, it's like try not. And then the fourth one, always do your best. And I mean, it's like for me, and it's like they become like mini mantras to me in a lot of ways, mm-hmm. because it's like, you know, try to follow them. But through our conversations, like, don't think, where you're at a bar and someone doesn't want to talk to you or whatever, like, don't take it personally. Try not to take it personally. You know, you email someone that could help you in the business, you haven't heard back, don't take it personally. And don't make assumptions. They hate me. That's why they haven't emailed me back, because they hate me. Probably not. You know, and I'm very good at, like, again, with my stories, I'm very creative in the sense, like, I can create a story out of that. This is why they're not emailing me back. And this is what I must have done something here. I must have done.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're just creating. So it's just pulling back from that stuff. Like, don't make assumptions. Like, I'm going to try not to make assumptions. I'm just going to clear my head and try not to. Yeah. And then always do your best. It's like, you know, if performers are listening to this, like, you might do a show where there's three or four people there. You have the 10:30 show or 11 o'clock show, and there's two or three on a Monday night, and do your best. Do your best. You never know who's going to be there. Like, do your best. And never mind, like, if they're going to be, you know, Florin Michaels is just sneaking in. It doesn't matter. It's like, that person could be like the next Lauren Michaels, or that person could be the person that sees you on the subway and says, I remember Peaches. So, like, you don't ever underestimate. And if you're there and you're doing something you love, don't phone it in.
Yeah.
Like, do your best. Yeah. And it's just, you know, when I started doing the Moth, you know, it was always smaller venues, but it was always sold out. And newer storytellers never knew about the open mics, never knew about doing shows. I mean, I did one music show at, I believe it was called the Orange Bear, by, the World Trade Center. And this was like 1999. I showed up and I was so excited. It was like one of my first book gigs. I had like an hour. I was into my second song. There was two people there. One left. One at the bar put money in the jukebox. And I was videotaping it. And I don't have the video. I cry. I threw the video. I wish I had the video. But I threw the video away. But I mean, I had a video camera set up of me performing. And so it was, talk about one of the worst nights ever.
Oh my gosh.
But you appreciate it. Now you, I'm able to, you know, I go to the Magnet, Armando Diaz Experience. I believe it's, April 23rd. You're doing it. And the crowd's there. The crowd wants to be there. Take it in.
Yeah.
Take it in.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so happy. I'm performing.
Yeah.
That
good. I was watching your face when I, the date. But so it's, like, appreciate it, but always do your best. That night I did my best. I mean, nobody wanted to hear me.
Yes.
But you always do your best. You always do your best.
Yeah.
You know? You're not feeling well. Do the best you can do not feeling well. Do the best you can do not feeling well. You know?
Yeah.
With COVID, maybe stay home.
Important side note. And it's also like it's an integrity thing. Like I am the kind of person that does my best, and you know, even if that only, you know, even if that's just like a self thing, right? Of like, this is the person I am. I do always do my best, and that's like a good reminder to yourself that like you respect yourself, you know, and you're kind to yourself.
Absolutely.
I love that. So that's wise words to live by. And then strength and stillness is about transcendental meditation. Are you a big meditator?
Yeah, Adam? You know, and part of it was through the classes, teaching, you know, 12 years ago, a lot of people started, you can hear mumblings during breaks, people talking about meditation. Always continue to have anxiety. More and more, less and less, more and more. It never goes away. And I started doing a lot of meditation about 6 years ago, trying different types, doing the apps. And then I got into TM and through a student. And a student really advised it. They said that we talked during break and just how his anxiety was taking over his life. And at that time, for me, it was just, you know, again, these are things sometimes we don't talk to people about because it's like, okay, nobody else is experiencing this. And he was open to me and I was open to him. And I started, I read that book, Bob Roth's book. He also does like a video online, a YouTube, like, you know, and I felt like I gotta try. And it's an investment. It's an investment. And, I took the classes, for TM, at the TM Center. And I've been doing it for 4 years. I do it twice a day. They say do it 20 minutes twice a day. I'm in this part of my OCD. I haven't missed a day. I haven't always done 20 minutes. So I want to be clear. But I haven't missed. Yeah. I have done it twice a day for 4 years. It'll be 4 years, like mid-March. And it's changed my life. And I'm not do any type of meditation, whatever works for you. But make it part of your life. It's helped my breathing, my asthma. From my stories, Dennis, you know, I have baby lungs. I'm asthmatic.
I
have
lungs the size of a baby. I just heard baby medical, lungs
medical
today.
So it's just like, but it's helped my breathing. It helps before shows. It helps before, like, it just centers me. And, it's something like I have, the screen won't see, you know, people, but like I have like my daily, what I do all day long and I cross it out. You guys are here, I think.
Yeah.
I highlight the important stuff, but it was like the TM and the TM. I mean, it's when I wake up in the morning, I do TM. I wash my face. It's getting up. You know, if you're going to get up at 7:30, I'm going to get up at 7:10. Literally get up earlier, but it helps so much. And, you know, and if you only do like 10 minutes, you can feel the effect of it, not doing the full, So it's been a game changer for me. Like these little things that change your life. Changed my life. It's changed my life, you know, for the better.
That's amazing. And just curious, what is the difference between transcendental meditation versus other types of meditation? Is there a difference?
For me, they don't make it preachy. They don't make it a religion, though there is based on religion and stuff like that.
Got it.
But it's like anybody can do it. And this one's through a mantra. They give you a mantra. For me, it's not pressure. Like if you have good meditations, you have bad meditations. Like, and sometimes the ones that you're sitting there for 20 minutes, your mind just keeps rattling the whole time. Sometimes those are good meditations because you're doing it. Like it's part of it. It's just, we talk about process and stuff. It's the same with meditation. Yeah. Sometimes you're just able to, all of a sudden I'm relaxed. Sometimes I never get relaxed, but it helps.
Yes.
There's different ways of doing it. And it's also like, No expectations. Like I'm going to feel better when I do it. No, like most of the time. So just trying to have that mindset and clearness. you know, prior to the pandemic at the Magnet Training Center, you know, I would teach 3 to 6 and then 6:30 to 9:30. And whoever was Justin or they would get at, when the 6 o'clock class ended, I'd run over. They beeline it to me almost like Elvis, you know, come on. Cause a few students wanted to answer. I go, you got to email me. I got to go do this. They put me in the closet, shut the door, and then I'd meditate for, I mean, sometimes a dentist, I think maybe once or twice, you open the door, you had to get a chair or something. I was just in there sitting.
With your Elvis cape, with all the right Elvis cape.
But you know, like Tina or Justin would be like, all right, no, you gotta help me with this. Oh, you need help? Oh, I'll help you. And they just shut the door. And then I would just go in there. And it was like it's tougher now just at Michael Howard, but it was like amazing how, like, and sometimes it was really only like a 15 minute meditation that whole next class, I was like refreshed. I was like ready to go.
That's so great.
So it's so to great. Each his own and what works best for you, you know, but this out of all of them, just, I mean, it worked really well for me.
Well, you got to find that thing that works for you. Sorry, Alan, go ahead.
Absolutely. I was going to ask you if you ever get hard on yourself for missing, but you never miss.
Some of those 20-minute sessions will be like 5 minutes, but like I'll do, like, you know, you know, like tonight, I'm not going to lie, we were going to meet at 6:30. So like 6:05, I did it to like 6:22. So, I mean, I didn't do it
good. Full,
but I got it
but
in.
You
but
did
I got
it. It in,
and
you
I felt better. Like I was like, all right, I'm a little foggy right when we started. And then it was like, okay, I'm good. So,
but you were right there, right on the button. Oh, 6:30 very punctual.
Perfectionist.
Your word is impeccable.
Yeah, my word is impeccable.
Your word is impeccable. You are living these values.
Yeah, trying. Trying.
Yeah. Well, I think we should wrap up here. Thank you. I could listen to you talk for hours, you. But I want to respect.
Likewise. This was lovely.
This is I'll end it on this, and I'm not like I said at the beginning. I think the world of both of you, and it was just like an honor for you to invite me. I think as performers. And now Dennis with the teach, I just think a lot of both of you. So I just want to let you know
that. Oh, thank you.
That really means
thank
a lot.
You.
To both of you teachers, I'm sorry. Both of you teachers.
Yeah.
It really means a lot to me.
And I'm grateful to the Magnet that I got to meet people like you. Like I say Virgil's was the biggest break I got, but finding the Magnet and finding this community, without a doubt, is like the greatest thing like in my 24 years.
I completely agree.
Same for me.
It's like, it's my third place. Yep. You know, that expression.
Yep.
It's
my third place.
Yeah.
Well,
I really
like you, Adam. That's all I wanted to say.
I really like you too, Adam. we're all about feelings here.
Yeah, we're not afraid of feelings. if you want to know more, see more, Adam Wade, adamwade.com is his website. You can find him on Instagram and YouTube at Adam Wade Storyteller. That's AdamWade Storyteller. But you already know how to spell it. You know Adam Wade. And you can find him on Twitter at Adam Wade. That's it for this week. You can follow us on Instagram at Pursuit of Perfectness. You can write us an email at pursuitofperfectness@gmail.com. We'd love to get a single email. if you like what you heard, rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, tell your friends. Thanks to Keith Burgone for our theme music. And until next time, be a little more soft and kind to yourself.
I like it, Donna.
Right? I'm trying to.
Bye.
Bye.